This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:18 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Chuang and Chen Li. We are turning our attention now to the war in Ukraine, which is entering its 50th day with no sign of a ceasefire or resolution in sight. Russian forces are regrouping for a renewed offensive in the southeastern Donbas region. And a month into the war, Russia has claimed they have taken control of 93% of Luhansk region and 54% of Donetsk.
The fighting is currently escalating. Attacks in the port city of Mariupol, which is seen as key for Russia to seize control of the Donbas region. Meanwhile, on the other side, the US and NATO allies are ramping up defense and intelligence assistance to Ukraine. The Pentagon recently announced an additional $800 million injection of military aid to Ukrainian forces, and the prospects of a breakthrough in peace negotiations have appeared to dissipate after President Vladimir Putin declared that peace talks were dead in local press conference this week.
So to take stock of the latest developments in the crisis, we speak to Professor Ruben Azizian, director at the Center for Defense and Security Studies at Massey University in New Zealand. Ruben, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, Russia says it's focusing its military offensive in the Donbas region after a month-long siege of areas around Kyiv failed to yield much ground for them. Did Russia miscalculate its initial strategy, and what did it fail to factor in?
Yes, I believe, and I'm not the only one. I think the majority of experts would say that Russia's initial plan didn't work out. The initial plan and strategy was very ambitious and, as it turns out, to be unrealistic. If we go back 50 days back, we remember that the strategy was about denazifying, which is a code word for getting rid of current leadership in Ukraine, demilitarizing, which is a code word for crippling Ukrainian armed forces, obviously take over southern and eastern part of Ukraine. So as we know, Ukrainian army put up resistance. The people of Ukraine, the majority of them, or where the Russian troops were deployed, were not welcoming the Russians. So this is why they had to retreat, and now they're focusing on what some even Russian experts say should have been the priority strategy. So they miscalculated on the expansionist ambitious plan, and they are now returning to the less ambitious idea of controlling southern and eastern part of Ukraine.
So what is the end game for Russia, Ruben? Would they be satisfied with the annexation of Donbas, or do you think they go further?
It will depend. I think initially, there's a lot of talk about what happens on May the 9th when Russia usually celebrates the victory in the Second World War, and there's a parade, and many expected Putin to declare victory on the 9th of May and all of that. So what will the victory look like on the 9th of May? Most likely the only victory they can claim on the 9th of May would be taking over Mariupol, which is still, fighting back. And even that is not very clear and definite. But taking over Donbas would definitely be seen or presented as a victory. But you know what? The Russian public, I think, has been so much brainwashed through the propaganda and the promises of, basically getting rid of Ukrainian leadership, making Ukraine a friendly country, and all of that. So just telling the public that, all we could do is expand our control in Donbas from, 50% to 90% or 80%, but even that is questionable. I'm not going to, it could maybe be seen as some victory, but it will not be seen as a sufficient enough victory. And so if they are able to take over Donbas, which will be very hard, and they will lose lots of troops and ammunition, I don't think they will have the strength and ambition to move further. I think that will be it.
What is your assessment of Ukraine's defense capabilities? I mean, while they've held out so far for now, can they withstand further onslaught, especially if the war rages on for a longer period of time?
Yes, I think they can. They have a number of things on their side and advantages. One is they are fighting for their own land. They are very motivated, unlike Russian troops, as we can see from many pictures and news. There is looting going on. The morale is not very high. And it interestingly takes so much time for the troops who were withdrawn from Kiev and northern part to regroup. The grouping is taking a lot of time. And that's because the units were depleted and the morale has been low. Some soldiers and officers don't want to go back to Ukraine. So this is important. As someone said, you know, motivation, if you have motivated, one motivated soldier is worth three unmotivated soldiers. Secondly, this the Ukrainian troops have been training and preparing for this kind of invasion in Donbas region. And I think we are talking about 90,000, 100,000 troops that are very well prepared. They have good ammunition, and now they're getting more supplies from the West. So it will be very hard for the Russians to overwhelm that kind of force. And the question now is, if they can't overwhelm and there is a stalemate, how long will it last? One question. And the second one, if the Russians are not successful, will Ukrainians have the ammunition and the strength to counterattack and repel the Russian troops from Ukraine? And that is another very uncertain question, because for that they will need more offensive weaponry, fighters, which NATO is very reluctant to supply at the moment.
And Ruben, President Vladimir Putin this week said that negotiations were dead. I mean, do you think that this puts an end to any peace talks? And what exactly stymied the talks? Were the parties even negotiating in good faith to begin with?
Well, to me, the negotiations were not really perhaps something that the two parties expected to conclude very soon and successfully. The only potentially realistic outcome of the negotiations was to reach some kind of a humanitarian agreement. And they were able to arrange some humanitarian corridors and exchange, captured troops. And that has been done. But expecting more was unrealistic. And the negotiations were used primarily by the Russians to test the Ukrainian will. Because if you look at what the two parties want from each other, it's very hard to agree on anything except for Ukraine not agreeing not to join NATO. But you know what? Ukraine wasn't going to be a member of NATO anyway. So that doesn't seem to me a significant concession from Ukraine. But Ukrainian leadership has clearly said no compromise on our sovereignty and territorial integrity. Russia demands that Ukraine recognize Crimea and Donbas as either part of Russia or independent. So how can you agree on those two? So the battle, upcoming battle, will probably influence, because you know the war will have to end one day and there will be some negotiation. So it will be very much shaped by the outcome of the war.
Mm. And I suppose taking a look at the broader landscape of the international community, at the moment, there's a lot of debate on whether Russia should be allowed to attend the G20 summit later this year, hosted by Indonesia. What do you think? Is there political will for Russia to be diplomatically isolated, or how might this play out?
It is an ongoing debate, and we know that the world is divided. The Europeans and Americans are much more assertive or aggressive diplomatically about excluding Russia from all these venues. Asian countries seem to be more careful and cautious. I know they talk about, you know, ASEAN dialogue, whether Russia should be part of that dialogue or not. Well, I am actually torn between these two options myself, because while Russia needs to get a message that this kind of behavior is unacceptable, completely isolating Russia from everything or all political venues doesn't help to try to somehow influence Russian leadership. I mean, we do know that Putin is the ultimate leader, but hopefully he listens to at least few in his inner circle. So any opportunity to influence would be good. You know, the Austrian chancellor went to Moscow recently and was trying again to talk to Putin unsuccessfully. So that means even Western leaders will continue to influence. So whether Russia is part of G20, I think we're talking about symbolism now. And symbolism, as long as Russia is not flexible, I think symbolism will prevail over substance.
Ruben, thanks very much for speaking with us this morning. That was Professor Ruben Azizian, Director at the Center for Defense and Security Studies of Massey University in New Zealand, giving us just an update on developments on the Ukraine war. Really, things are, I guess, moves will be made on the ground, and that will determine what happens off the in the peace table.
Yeah, that May 9th victory parade for the Second World War was interesting because I wasn't aware that such a thing was going on in Russia. So obviously, Putin has got to, you know, orchestrate a number of events for him to declare success in some sense.
Something to look out for. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.